The Coptimizer podcast is being powered by Axon Coaching. Axon Coaching was purpose-built for today's public safety employees to help them accomplish goals and live better. What is it, you ask? One-on-one video-based coaching with officers who have been in your shoes and know firsthand what it means to live and work in public safety. The program will connect you with certified coaches who combine their years of success from the world of law enforcement with world-class training from Axon. Get the support, resources, motivation you need to live the life you want. Axon coaches are relatable, knowledgeable, and confidential. And most importantly, they get results. Why should the keys to unlocking our peak performance be reserved for just the boardroom or the playing field? Unleash your full potential today and get started with Axon Coaching. Log into axon-coaching.com and learn more about how to bring this program to your agency and community. So, enough of that. It's time to Coptimize. Good day, everybody. Welcome back to the Coptimizer podcast. If you haven't listened to any of our episodes already, here we are, Coptimizer podcast, episode number one, the origin story. And what better place to start than with the origin of Axon Coaching himself, Daniel Folk. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Hey, Chief. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
Well, you know, you're kind of the man that made all this possible. So it really just kind of makes sense to have a conversation with you. And, you know, let's just jump right into it. What is Axon Coaching?
Yeah, sure. So the way I would explain it to pretty much everyone is it is a coaching platform. And I guess there's a lot to break down there. But let's start with the platform side of things. I'm sure most of the people listening have either used Uber or Airbnb at some point in their life. And we've developed a platform that's very similar to that.
Many times, by the way, many times. Uber has been my savior.
So what we've created is the opportunity for a law enforcement officer to create a profile and then literally shop for a coach that covers some aspect of life that they are looking to cover. On the coaching side of things, what we do is we take subject matter experts and active duty or recently retired law enforcement professionals and then train them in the art of life coaching. The idea here is we can pair up a police officer with a life coach who basically speaks the language, right? Who has navigated a career in the field of law enforcement and is able to kind of cut through a lot of the explanation stuff that, you know, a lot of times civilians don't. They don't understand the terminology or what's going on, you know, within the profession. It's a very nuanced, specific profession. And so by being able to cut through right to the core of any topic or subject for a client, in this case, an officer, has been tremendously helpful. I guess there's probably the other thing to clarify is what is coaching? I think a lot of people think about coaching with respect to athletics, right? I've got a football coach, a basketball coach. Most of us have probably played sports and know what that relationship is like. It's also very common to have a business coach. You know, from the world of Fortune 500 companies in particular, we often see top level executives working with a coach or coaches on leadership or, you know, presentation skills or generally some sort of tangible skill, but also something that is, you know, more holistically based. So how is my work-life balance? Am I sleeping right? How's my nutrition? One of the spiels that I always give to any new chief or officer who's, you know, interested in this program is, let's look at a guy like Tom Brady, who he was a good football player, right? But in a very short period of time, he goes on to become one of the greatest of all time. And he, you know, yes, he has tremendous skill, but a lot of people do. Yes, he works hard, but a lot of people do. You know, he's not doing anything too dissimilar from any, you know, most other people who are working hard, have good skills, mean well. But how does he go on to become so much better, so much quicker? I would argue, and a lot of evidence suggests that it has to do with coaching. And really what we mean is a network or a team of people behind the scenes holding that one particular person accountable to their goals, their motivations, their ambitions, making sure they're in good headspace so that they're happier, they're more adjusted, their stress is managed, and they're going through life with a sense of purpose and direction. And so that's really what coaching is. And when we combine that, that methodology, if you will, with this platform we've created, we now just have created an unlimited marketplace where an officer can work on any aspect of life from, like I said, relationships, stress management. I want to go through a promotional process. How do I get the upper hand in the interview process? I'm looking for, you know, additional training on tactical skills. It could be anything. I now have this one-stop shop where I can go and connect with somebody outside of my social circle, outside of my network, who, you know, speaks my language and can give me that unfair advantage, if you will. That's what Axon Coaching is all about.
Yeah, that's awesome. And of course, you and I have got to know each other pretty well over the last year. And it was, we all have these epiphanies in life and these moments where it's like, man, why didn't I think of that? And I go back to my early CrossFit days, or I should say, yeah, even in my early CrossFit days, you know, I had been into fitness, I'd been into nutrition. It really helped me with my job performance, not just on the street, but also in my responsibilities, my role as a SWAT team member, a team commander, and ultimately a chief. But the concept of coaching and the concept of, you know, finding something that's going to make you a little bit better, that's going to force you to get outside of your comfort zone, where you're going to have an outside set of eyes looking at you and telling you what you're doing. There are so many things that I want to say in 1 minute right here that I just can't. And, you know, so I just got so excited when I heard about what you were doing, and that epiphany was like, yeah, this just makes perfect sense. Because, you know, when we go through our careers in law enforcement, we're very good at teaching the technical and the tactical skills. But sometimes the one big gap and the one area that we have not historically been good at is teaching our police officers how to manage themselves. What is your approach every day to get the most out of your day? Because a healthy and a happy employee is going to be a more productive employee. And I know that sounds very simple. It sounds kind of cliche, pie in the sky. But when you start to break that down and actually think about, well, what does make a happy and healthy employee? There's just so many different directions that we can go with this. But, you know, one of the things that you said in your background there, in terms of why Axon Coaching and why a coach, period, and one of the benefits that your platform brings is that you have mentors from within law enforcement. So the coaches themselves are selected from inside of the policing profession primarily because they really understand the job. And, you know, we've kind of had this saying over the years that, and, you know, in some aspects, I think it's very true and it's very healthy. In some aspects, it's not. And that's cops trust other cops.
Well, that's understandable. I mean, I think, you know, as I've gotten to know this culture more, I totally get the, hey, I trust my brothers and sisters over, you know, civilians. I get that. But I think there is this relatability factor here that's huge. I was speaking to a client of ours recently, and you know, his quote was, hey, one of the things that I really enjoyed about talking to a colleague was I don't have to spend an hour explaining what a search warrant is just to then get to the point of what I really want to talk about. So, you know, I can tell you that since getting into the world of law enforcement from the outsider's perspective, man, there's a ton of terminology and nuances and stuff that do require a lot of explanation and then require, you know, significant context as well. And so I can totally see how, you know, cutting through all of that. So I can just say, hey, chief, you know, I've got this going on and you immediately know it. Well, that just saved me 45 minutes of time. And I know instinctively that you are relating to that on the same level. And that's really powerful. Not everybody needs that, right? I mean, if you're talking to a nutritionalist, nutrition is nutrition, whether you're, regardless of your profession. So those are subject matter expert topics. But by and large, I think the, I don't think that there's as much of a negative around cops only talk to cops as a lot of people like to say there is. I think cops talking to cops is huge if we can ensure that that conversation is, you know, effective and going in the right direction.
And it's based in sound data and sound information and best practices.
Yeah.
And so one of the things, when I was, this was years ago, 27 years in law enforcement, 4 years in the military, prior to going to college, where I was also involved in policing. So over 30 years total, I was reading one of our promotional exam books as I was getting ready, and they were talking about the different methods for, you know, organizational development and learning. And one of the methods discussed was trial and error learning. And this was the first time I read where somebody was like, you know, trial and error learning is one of the least effective ways to move an individual and an organization forward, because a couple of things have to happen. It's not that it's ineffective in the long term, because it can be very successful if you're doing something for a long period of time. Ultimately, if you're focused on continuous development and improvement, you'll find the best ways. But it requires a couple things. One, you have to understand that what you're doing might not be the most effective way. Round wheels versus square wheels. If I've never seen a round wheel before, my square wheel might seem awesome until I see someone else doing something better. So, and then making mistakes in order to improve, we're all going to make mistakes, but if we can learn from the mistakes of others, you know, that's kind of what the prefrontal cortex is for. It gives us this opportunity to not have to experience some of the pain points that others have. We can learn from what others have done. And so again, to this concept of having a professional law enforcement officer that's a trained coach, that's been vetted and really knows what they're doing, I think can have a significant impact on individual officers and organizations, and really help accelerate the professional development of police officers.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir over here, Chief, but I will tell you that I think the other thing that is required here is one's willingness to eat a good slice of humble pie. And really, you know, we can sit here and talk about, oh, this is so great and coaching is wonderful and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, if that individual, if the client isn't willing or ready to, you know, look inwards and make and say, okay, I'm ready for some personal growth, then it doesn't matter how much external anything we throw at them, change isn't going to happen. And that's not a policing issue. That's just a fundamental reality of human nature, I believe.
Yeah, I'm right there. So the Tom Brady analogy, I think, is brilliant. I think everybody in the world knows who he is for a lot of different reasons. But yeah, it's fascinating, really, when you think about this. One of the most pressure-packed critical skills profession in existence, and we've never really adopted this wholesale concept of honing the individual through modern coaching practices and techniques. And that's what Axon Coaching is bringing to the table, and I think it's long overdue, and man, it's exciting. It's exciting. So I appreciate everything that you've done to this point, and I have a ton of questions, and I know a lot of our audience is going to have questions about what this is all about. So
let's get into it.
Yeah. So maybe we should start not by what Axon Coaching is, but what it's not. You know, when we get out on the road, and I've been out with you several times, when we start describing this program to chiefs and administrators, the tendency for them sometimes is to gravitate immediately towards maybe an officer that's struggling with something emotionally, or someone that's having some performance or some disciplinary issues. Maybe that, you know, the proverbial bad apple, you know, how do I flip that officer and turn them around? So,
sure. So, I mean, coaching, first of all, is not punishment. It's not something you have to do. It's something you get to do. And, maybe another way to look at this is, you know, I've been on the road with you showing this to different agencies, and there is a, you know, a good percentage of leaders and organizations out there have that gut reaction to, oh, well, we've got a great EAP program, or we have an awesome, you know, peer counseling program, to which I would say that's fantastic. I mean, those are really well-intentioned programs. They serve a purpose, and we are by no means, you know, interested or trying to compete with that. One of the main reasons why we wanted to start Axon Coaching was we saw a gap in the officer performance wellness space where, hey, everything that is out there today is very, very reactive, meaning an officer is not going to go to EAP unless something, you know, bad happens or traumatic happens, or they're in a pretty dark place. It's not something that officers say, oh yeah, chief, sign me up for EAP. I can't wait to go. I don't think anybody's ever said that. And that's what I mean. It's like, hey, we're just going to go maintain the status quo. We're going to go through life. And if something negative occurs, then you can go to this program. And again, super well-intentioned. I'm not trying to take a dump on that. What I am saying though is, what are we doing for all this time during an officer's life and career that is helping to not only prevent them from ever getting into a dark space to begin with, but how can we actually take that fundamentally good person with a ton of potential, a long runway ahead of them, how can we make a small investment in them, a couple of tweaks here and there, and take that good officer and make them great? That's a question that we set out to answer, and one that I think we can completely accomplish through the art of coaching. We see this being tremendously successful in essentially every other industry and sector out there, whether that is athletics, the performing arts, business, high performing people, people at the top of their game in literally any career, any industry. Yes, they're good. Yes, they work hard. So does everyone else. The difference is they've got that support network and they were willing to put their egos aside. They were saying, I want to be good. I'm willing to be very, very transparent about my own self-evaluation, right? I'm willing to reflect. I'm willing to take the input from others and not let that fire me up in a negative way, but I'm going to use that to grow. And individuals that are willing to embrace that, they're going to go on to become the greatest of all time, regardless of what it is they're doing. You know, that's, I feel like maybe I'm speaking a little bit in generic terms here. It's kind of cliche to some extent, but the other big missing link in this was the privilege of being able to have access to coaches to begin with. The other thing I want to say about this is like Axon Coaching in many ways democratizes one's ability to have access to a coach. You know, Chief, you had said it's kind of surprising that the world of law enforcement hasn't adopted a wholesale approach to coaching. And I was thinking a little bit about that question prior to this episode here. And, you know, you look at coaching has always been in the world of athletics. That's clear. It has in the last probably 25, 30 years become big business for businesses. In fact, you see people from the world of public safety, particularly like special operations type guys. You see, you know, hardcore military type people that will, you know, I think like a Jocko Willink type of person who has this really high intensity career and then starts drawing all these parallels to my career in the military to, you know, business boardroom tactics, stuff like this. And that's super relatable. And I think people are also attracted to that though, because of the higher margins, right? You can make more money doing that. There's this idea that police officers, you know, they're the heroes and the saviors. And if they're saying, hey, I'm not good enough, or I'm admitting guilt, then shoot, who are we going to call? So I think there's a lot of different variables that are going into why we haven't seen this become mainstream before. But I also think that we're at a very much a cultural tipping point where we've got younger generations of officers entering the profession who are much more willing and much more open to saying, hey, I'm not even looking for help, but I'm looking for some additional guidance. I want to be on a path that's taking me somewhere that has purpose and meaning. And I'm not just aimlessly spinning my wheels for the next 35 years.
Yeah, that's a lot of great wisdom right there. And you mentioned the good to great analogy earlier. And I think many of us have read Jim Collins's work, probably one of the most recognized business books out there, Good to Great. And one of the concepts And by the way, for those that have never read it, I would strongly encourage you to read that book. And then for those in the public safety sector, he actually wrote a follow-up book because he was getting so many questions and so many inquiries about we've seen the impact in the Fortune 500 world, a lot of the analogies, but how does this affect social sectors? So he actually wrote a follow-up book geared specifically towards social sectors, just to show that the concepts are, they are fairly universal. Certainly they're, in policing, we're not selling widgets. Things are a little bit more unpredictable. There's a lot of various discussion that we could go down that road. But one of the concepts that he talked about in his book that really stuck with me was the importance of assigning your greatest opportunities to your best employees and not saddling your best employees with your biggest problems. And, speaking, just from a chief's perspective, that was something that I really struggled with that. And I battled that throughout my whole career, long before I was chief, even as a, as a SWAT team leader and commander, as a frontline supervisor, even in different roles that I had over my career. But first and foremost, you're looking for someone that you trust that's going to get the job done, whatever it is. If I need something done, I think any one of us, no matter where we work, no matter what we do, there's going to be a couple of your go-to people that immediately come to mind. And sometimes that might require specific skills. Sometimes it's just you're on tight timelines and you need someone that's got that drive, that ethic, and just the tenacity to find a solution. The humble pie piece here, the accountability piece of that is, I was just as guilty as that as anybody else, because man, I just want to get the job done. I want someone that I know and I can trust. And the problem there is that you limit the opportunities for growth in other employees, people that have the potential to get this done. And in the end, all you're really doing there is, outside of maybe limiting a growth opportunity for someone, in a sense, you're kind of rewarding your lower performers, because in the end, they know if I don't volunteer, it's like the Army saying, right? Or the military, I should say. I'm an Air Force guy, so I don't want to speak for my Army brothers and sisters. Don't volunteer for anything, right? You're told right from the word go. It's a long way of saying.
It makes sense. I see the irony in it, where, you want your good people to solve big problems because you want it done right and you trust that they've got the skill, but it's also one hell of a way to demotivate somebody, right? If I'm a rock star and I keep having to shovel crap, I'm going to get demotivated pretty quickly. I mean, one can argue, hey, it's a balancing act. Like, everybody's got to pull their weight. But I think the bigger picture here that you're saying is, how do we tap into people who maybe aren't the very best, but how do we unlock their potential and then create an environment where we can give them a challenge or a problem to solve? And with a little bit of accountability, a little bit of coaching, perhaps, we know that they're going to make mistakes the first couple of times. But, if we're willing to make that investment, to be patient, to be understanding, that we can turn, that 5 out of 10 person into a 7 or an 8 out of 10 pretty quickly. And suddenly you've got somebody else on your team who's another rock star. I think that's the big goal here. And it's counterintuitive when you're in a crisis or you're under pressure and you're just like, damn it, I got to get this done now. I don't have time to hold people's hands. I will be the first to admit that I've been guilty of that in, other businesses I've had. But I can tell you from personal experience, being able to just kind of loosen the reins and say, okay, the grand scheme of life, the world's going to keep on turning. And if I am willing to make of this investment in somebody who's on my team, who's maybe not my first pick for this job, but we give them the right coaching, the right mentoring, and the right education around this, they're going to become another super valuable asset in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. And, what we're all looking for, right, is to drive the best value for whatever our business might be. In the world of policing, that's community safety, right? That's our number one priority, is to protect life. And there's a lot of different ways we can prioritize things to do that. But at the core of that, in everything that we do, it are people, your employees. They are the most valuable asset that we have. And, you know, the truth is that they deserve the investment to maximize their skills and their talents. And I'm just not necessarily sure that, I think for all the greatest of intentions inside of policing, I think sometimes we get it right, sometimes we don't. And the last 7 years in particular have been very difficult for the profession. We have had to face a lot of hard truths about some of the deficiencies in our profession. But what I tell people all the time is, like, sometimes as bad as it may seem, policing has never been better. And I can say that with a straight face. And I truly believe that we have amazing people that are out there day and night just doing amazing work. But we're asking them to do a lot right now. And, you know, the kind of the saying is, if we overtask and underinvest and, you know, in the event, you know, in the end, you know, everybody, every profession, every person, every team, you know, it kind of has its stress points and its breaking points. And I really feel like in this time period right now, we're at a critical juncture in policing in America, and police chiefs are feeling this pressure. They're feeling, you know, the need to build community relationships and trust, but they also have to send officers out to do a very dangerous and difficult time. And the concept of defunding the police is just, you know, to me, I think some people felt, maybe they have good intentions with this, but it's one of the most backwards approaches to fixing a problem that I can think of. What we really need in policing is the investment in our police departments, invest in our officers. And that's something where I really think Axon Coaching is one of those solutions that has found its way into policing at maybe the ideal time. And what do you think about that?
I think there is absolutely a tremendous amount of space to proactively support law enforcement in ways that have never been done before. And I hear all the different thoughts and rumors and ideas around how to address this issue. One thing that I hear a lot, and I'm sure everybody has, is this idea of community policing. And I think that, at least today, that's still very much a gray area for a lot of people. But I think what we have been able to accomplish is, one, it's not the only, but it's definitely one avenue through which I think we are able to not only define this, but actually proactively address it. And what I mean is, you know, we've been running coaching for close to 2 years now with a number of different agencies, lots of different officers, different ranks, et cetera. And across the board, we are seeing officers who, you know, after only 2, 3, maybe 4 months of working with a coach, we are seeing increased levels of happiness, significant increases in happiness. We are seeing, you know, as much as a 52% reduction in daily stress and increased levels of high quality sleep. So sleep without drinking, without sleeping aids. And so if, think about that for a second, Chief. We've got an officer who's happier, less stressed out, and better rested. That person is what we call in better headspace. They are making better decisions. They are thinking more clearly. They are more of their true human self. You know, you think about like the Snickers ad, right? You're not yourself when you're hungry. You're also not yourself when you're miserable, stressed out, and sleep deprived. So, okay. So we've got an officer who's now better self-actuated. We know from the data that they're going to be making better decisions, particularly under pressure, but they're also going to be having more empathetic interactions with community members. They're not going to be so quick to, you know, assume something negative about a person at a traffic stop. They're going to be more willing to show empathy and genuinely try and help and solve a situation rather than just, this is another, you know, I got to meet my quota for today or something. And so I think by addressing, you know, officers at an individual level to ultimately make them a higher performing officer and serving community members better, we can address this community policing issue as it stems from a better adjusted officer. The other thing that we've seen coming out of this is when we do have officers in better headspace, they report increased levels of favoritism towards their organization, their profession, and even their colleagues. So, hey, because I'm not as grumpy, you know, I think I'm starting to remember or rediscover why I got into this profession. Or, you know, my colleagues, yeah, they can be a pain in the ass sometimes, but I understand why. I'm able to not let my own emotions or my own frustrations override my logical brain. And in doing so, we're also addressing one other pretty big systemic problem in policing right now, which is it's a ridiculously high rate of turnover. I think national average right now is about 11 to 14% annual turnover at any police department. So that's pretty scary. And those numbers are predicted to continue to increase as, you know, older generations of officers come up for retirement. But we're also seeing recruitment rates being really, really low. So much to the point where agencies are literally cannibalizing each other, doing lateral transitions, right? If I work at agency A, agency B down the street's dangling a $5,000 signing bonus for me, and that might tempt me in the short term, but that's not going to fix any problem. And it's just going to steal one person from, you know, the community down the road. I think if we have a program in place or something that gives officers a greater sense of purpose beyond just a $5,000, I mean, shoot, you can blow through that pretty quick. That's not a lot of money when you really think about it. This is now something that becomes a desirable mechanism to get higher quality candidates back into the profession. You know, studies looking at millennials and Gen Z, their decision-making priorities around employment choices. Let's say you have two companies. They're exactly the same, right? And I'm a millennial and I'm trying to decide where to go. The salary is the same at both. The benefits are the same at both. Everything is literally the same. What makes the younger generations choose one over the other isn't an increase in salary or more vacation days, or I get to wear a Hawaiian shirt on Fridays. It's none of that gimmicky stuff. They want to know, is there a career or professional development opportunity there for me? Is something there in place that lets me know that this organization cares about me as a person and is putting me on a track that will actually help develop me further? Like I said before, I don't want to feel like I am just spinning my wheels for the next 35 years. You know, we get millennials and Gen Z get a lot of crap these days about, oh, they're, you know, impatient and they're spontaneous and they only work for, you know, a year or two here and then they jump ship. Well, you know, if you ask me, I think it has less to do with the fact that they're just entitled slobs, like a lot of people think. And it has a lot more to do with this generation wants to be treated differently and wants to work differently and prioritizes their life differently than their parents did. And Chief, you know, no offense, you're quite a bit older than I am, but I assume that you thought
only in biological age, or I should say in time age, in biological age, I'm pretty young.
Sure. Yeah. You're still 18. You can tell yourself that, but I'm sure you thought and perceived the world very differently than your parents did. This is the natural order of things. And so yes. Where I'm going with this is, and we're already seeing evidence of this with some of the agencies we work with. They're saying, hey, I'm not going to dangle $5,000 and hope to just get somebody to come in the door because of that. I want people that are coming in with real purpose and substance and are getting into policing for the right reasons. And I think if I've got a coaching program or a professional development program or something where I can take young people, develop good habits from day one and put them on a track where they can see where they're going with the steps of how to get there. And they've got a team of people behind them, helping them. Shit, man, that is so much more powerful than any sort of, you know, cheap trick to get somebody in the door. So,
yeah. Wow. And so when you talk about the differences in generation, that's been brought to my attention a lot. And at times I've been guilty of this myself, where I do really fall into your camp and and understanding that this generation does want things differently for a lot of different reasons. But when I hear some of my fellow chiefs and others, you know, maligning this generation, you know, my first question back to them is, hey, who raised this generation? Yeah. I think guilty, right? This is us. And I'll drop another book that Jonathan Haidt wrote this book, The Coddling of the American Mind. And if you haven't read that, it lays out the historical roadmap for where we are, how we got here today. But, you know, without going into all that, this generation, they see things differently and they do protect their time better. And so for all the reasons why sometimes we complain, oh man, I can't get them to work overtime. They don't want to, they're not interested in all the money they can make, you know, on these secondhand jobs and things. And it's, you know, it's because that they've been raised in a generation where they've watched people and, you know, and seen what's happened to them. And so on one hand, you have veteran officers that often will complain about that mindset. But on the other hand, you have veteran officers, you know, in private one-on-one sessions, just like, hey man, you know, you got to have a life outside the job. Don't live this work, because that is, you know, that's a road to catastrophe itself. So, you know, we're our own worst enemies. For a lot of reasons, but we can learn from it. And, you know, a couple other things I wanted to touch on real quick. You talk about the cannibalization of police departments, man. You know, we've been seeing that for a while. And, I was a chief in a mid-sized agency, you know, not huge, not small. We would tend to, you know, historically attract an officer coming from a smaller community different reasons. Like sometimes, you know, sometimes it's geography. Sometimes it's the difference in work. Some people want to be busy. They want to have opportunities with inside of agencies, not feel like they're stuck, what you were saying, in a career development path that was really going nowhere. And sometimes it comes down to just money and just pay. And some people are looking for that pay. And what again, and I think any commander or administrator that's worked in hiring for a while, and we understand that, you know, the grass is not always greener on the other side. Different departments in my retirement and in a lot of things I was doing prior to retirement, I got the opportunity to travel and talk with other chiefs and see how things are going around the country. And, you know, it's really different city, different patch on the shoulder, same problems. And a lot of our problems, they stem from resources, a lack of resources. Maybe a task confusion between, you know, city management and communities. But pay can, you know, certainly we want the benefits and things like that. But when we look for the simple solution, like offering the $5,000 signing bonus to attract and try to lure people, you know, and now you see things like police departments are putting up billboards, you know, in Seattle, you know, when they're having problems out in Seattle, you know, other cities around the country are throwing up billboards. Hey, Seattle, come, you know, police officers, come work for us. And, you know, that's maybe a whole nother conversation. But for the person that doesn't necessarily understand the core issue here is that it's not, you know, when you lose an officer, you're not just losing the person, right? You're losing the investment that you've made in that person, the time, the training, the knowledge and the experience that officer has gained. So it's not, you know, when turnover is inside of an agency, it's not just a simple equation in terms of how much does it cost to hire a new officer. It's what are you losing when an officer walks out the door and retires early?
That is a huge question, and it's one that we can to some extent quantify, but to a large extent we can't. I mean, the intangible stuff you're talking about, Chief, the experience, the knowledge, the wisdom, I mean, that's something that you cannot get back. by simply replacing that with a, you know, a new officer. It's not just a, it's like changing a part on your car. It doesn't perform exactly the same, right?
Right.
You've got a person with the experience, the wisdom, et cetera. And that's a huge loss that it's hard to put a price on. But what I can speak to and what we do have a ton of data on is a lot of the underlying, often overlooked costs associated with turnover. And there's another bit of, let's say, misaligned thinking around it. The obvious perspective here is, okay, if I have a team of 10 people and I'm paying each of them $58,000 a year in salary, and one of them quits, I have 9 people left. So the other 9 have to work a little bit harder to pick up the slack, but hey, I'm saving $58,000 or $59,000 a year because I'm not paying that person. On the surface, that logic seems sound, but the reality is there is a ton of hidden costs, if you will, associated with the loss of that one person. That agency is not going to suddenly start working at 9 officers forever. They do need to get back up to 10. So that very short-term perceived, quote, savings of $58,000 actually turns into a much larger number. Current data today suggests that it's about 213% of an officer's annual salary to replace that officer. So what that means is if that officer who quit was making $59,000 a year, for the agency to replace that person will cost approximately $180,000, because they will have to pay the salary for the next person coming in, but you've also got the costs associated with training, recruiting. You know, they got to get a different uniform. There's, if your time is valuable, which it is, there's the distraction costs associated with this as well. And so it is a tremendous net loss just from a financial perspective, not to mention the intangibles you spoke of, Chief. So it's one of these things that is huge and is often overlooked, again, because I think we're so caught up in, I've just got to put out this immediate problem in front of me, and okay, budgets were already tight to begin with. And so if I lose somebody, yeah, it sucks. I can ask everyone else to work a bit more and I save some money. But the reality is that's not true, and it's definitely not sustainable.
Yeah. And 213%, that is a huge, huge number. And if it's not sinking in, maybe let me put it this way. A lot of agencies use pool cars and not take-home cars. Take-home cars can be an incentive. There's a lot of reasons, but the primary reason why the take-home vehicle program in any agency is the best cost equation. It gives you the best value is because you're able to care for the maintenance of that vehicle for a longer period of time. When a car is driven 24/7, when it's going out on a 12-hour shift, it's running all shift, it comes back and it goes right back out, and it comes back in and goes right back out. That's the same thing as running a department when you're short-staffed, when you don't have enough people, or you're overtasking with the types of calls and things that you're doing. I mean, in the end, something always has to give. So in agencies where you see that, whether it's a chief budget officer for a city, whether it's an internal decision, there's usually a lot of different influences on that determine who gets to spend the money and why. The capital outlay to buy 10 additional cars instead of, 10 more cars maybe let's say you're going to buy 30 cars instead of 20 in a year. That's a big outlay. Maybe that's up to and upwards to $50,000 or $60,000 to equip a car. So you're talking, $250,000, and you can extrapolate the cost out. And someone looks at that and says, well, we don't have $250,000 this year, so we're not going to do that. Well, guess what? Next year, you're going to spend $300,000 because your cars, you're not going to get the same length of use out of your vehicles. Your maintenance costs are going to go up. So, it's just kind of a different way to think about that cost perspective. I don't necessarily like comparing people to cars, but I'm just trying to do this in a way that might help to make this the investment in wellness programs, the investment in training and development and in people, a much more salient discussion. And then, you know, something else, you know, when you talk about hidden costs, and so now this, we're talking, you know, more on the micro for agencies itself, but when you're talking about the macro and state levels and even across the country, I'm going to have the executive director for the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy on the podcast, because we had an interesting discussion once about how this was impacting our ability for our state academy to operate. And here is another area. It's one of the hidden costs that you're talking about that people don't consider. If you have, when you're trying to run an academy, the fixed length of the academy is, you know what the topics that you need to cover are. So you can start building out what the capacity is for how many people you can put in that class. But what happens now if you're basing this on a 2% turnover rate or a 3% or a 5% based on annual retirements? In the last 5 years, we've seen those numbers go as high as 15%, and in some agencies, in some areas, all the way up to 30% increase in turnover. So not only do agencies have to find new people to bring in and train, they have to train them. They have to get them to their academies. And so now that requires the cost and just all the logistics that go into ramping up your academy spend. So again, it's another hidden cost that just gets pushed to somebody else. But, you know, and then you throw something like a pandemic on top of all of this. And yeah, it's a big cost. So it comes back down to something, what seems like again, kind of a no-brainer. Instead of waiting and paying for all the repair, why don't we invest upfront in the development to extend the well-being and the life and the, at the same time, the efficiency and the effectiveness of police officers through, and what better way to do that than through a formalized mentoring program that's designed specifically to optimize the performance of our officers.
Well, to use your car analogy again, Chief, even if you did have, you know,
perfect, I know you're a car guy, so yeah. Had to get that car in there.
Even if you have a perfect fleet of vehicles, you still have to change the oil. You still have to service it. And people are certainly no different. Like, you can't just run it 24/7. So
you're not. I use that a lot when I talk about nutrition and fitness, that I talk about that a lot, right? You know, we're given one body, one life to live. And, you know, the old, was it the James Dean saying, you know, live fast, die young, leave a beautiful corpse. I don't know if that was him or you know, that sounds great when you're young. And then you get older and you realize, you know, as a much older, wiser person, yeah, things start breaking. And then you start realizing, man, I should have done a few things differently in my youth. Maybe I shouldn't have lived as hard and as fast. But, you know, some lessons we learn the hard way. But hey, just, you know, and again, great, great discussion. Before we get too much further down the road, maybe just change gears a little bit, because I want to, for the people that are listening to this podcast and they're interested in coaching and they're interested about what this can bring, what is it, you know, maybe just walk through what the mechanics of it are. Like, okay, hey, Chief Lanley, we think this is a great program for you. And you agreed to this. So here's how it goes. Here's what we want you to do.
Sure. So quickly, what you would do, Chief, is you would decide how many of your officers you want to enroll into this program and give them access to the platform. How many? I'll tell you that, hey, give this to whomever you want to keep. And I don't mean that facetiously. It's really, this is something that if you only give it to 25% of your guys, fine. But the more you're going to give it to who are going to actually use it, the more benefit you're going to see. And essentially, you give them an account or access to the platform. So you inform these officers, hey, congratulations, guys. You know, we've got a career development opportunity for you. You know, we've handpicked you. the agencies here is going to make an investment in you because, you know, we see their potential and we want to get you paired up with a coach. And so you've got unlimited access for, you know, the X number of years to work with a coach or coaches at your own pace. You know, the last thing we want to do is make this feel like, oh God, it's another thing I got to do on my plate. And so there, you know, the thing with coaching is that it's all driven by the client. There is no, you got to do this every Tuesday and Thursday for the rest of your life, or you got to do this, you know, 5 hours a week and then there's a final exam. It's driven by the individual. So if I'm an officer and I know that I want to, I got a sergeant's exam coming up, I can find, you know, a coach or two that will help me role play through those scenarios, pick apart my interviewing skills, challenge me. So I'm super prepared for that. And, you know, after I get that position, maybe I don't use the platform for a couple of weeks until something else comes up that I want to work on. But I think that point of it's completely user driven is huge. Because this is not something anybody has to do. It's something that people get to do and ultimately want to do. So logistically, you know, you select the individuals in your organization that, you know, who are going to want to use it and who, you know, will benefit. They get access to the platform. They create an account. A lot of officers have compared it kind of to like online dating, quite frankly, where there's a whole bunch of different coaches on there. You put in, I want to talk to a male or a female at this time who covers X, Y, and Z topics, and it'll spit out, you know, availabilities. You look at their profile, learn about who they are, what they've done, how they can work with you. And then you literally just book a time with them and you connect with them on a telephone call, a Zoom call, FaceTime, whatever works. But these are all people who are all over the country. They're generally not associated with your agency or your community in any way. And there's real value and power in that. Having somebody who's, you know, on the other side of the country who has been through similar things, has the knowledge and wisdom that you're looking for and has nothing but your own best interest in mind. That's super powerful. But that's pretty much it.
Yeah. You know, and it sounds simple. And quite frankly, it is. It's, you know, and we tend to overcomplicate things sometimes. We look for magic solutions when really, sometimes some of the best solutions are right in front of us. There's a tendency within law enforcement, and this is, and again, this is an individual, I guess an individual perspective or observation. We, you know, and sometimes it's driven by cost and by budgets, but when we look at programs, sometimes we see things that we really want, but if my training budget is X and this program, you know, and the program is Y, and that's going to prohibit or prevent me from being able to buy the number of rounds that I need for firearms training or the equipment for defensive tactics or different things, then sometimes we can talk our way out of a solution, or we can say, well, you know what, we can do that better. I'll go back to the good to great. I'll take my one officer that's really good at something. And now I'll task him with, hey, you're going to, you know, you were a college wrestler. You're now going to be our defensive tactics instructor. Oh, and you're good with firearms. So we're also going to make you a firearms instructor. Oh, and guess what? You're really good at talking with people. So we're going to send you to, some type of, you know, one of the plethora of trainings that's out there for de-escalation. And now next thing you know, you've got a small group of officers that have a lot of training in a lot of different areas, and then others that are waiting to get that training. And now we just don't have an efficient way to, so we think we're doing it efficiently by saving costs by only training one or two people and then having that, you know, using that train the trainer model. But in the end, it costs us more. And sometimes where we think, you know, internally cops, you know, we tend to think that we can always do it better than what another cop is doing or another agency is doing. So we take what they learn and then we put our own little spin on it. And the further and further away we get from the source of the knowledge, the more watered down the information gets. So for an Axon coach, and one of the things that I really appreciated about your program was the vetting that goes on and the selection of who gets to become a coach. because that, you know, that's a critical component to this program. So for a chief that's out there that might have this question, well, I like this program. I love the concepts. I'm thinking about investing in it. How do, you know, how can I be comfortable knowing that you have the best interest of my agency at heart, and that the culture and the mindset and the professionalism that you're going to develop is going to meet the standards of what I expect at my agency?
Sure. So I think there's two ways to answer that question. The first being around, you know, who are the coaches themselves, but then how do we capture the priorities of your agency? The coaches themselves are people that we are personally recruiting, vetting, and then running through a training program that we have created. The people behind the scenes that have helped develop our training material come from the worlds of public safety, policing, the FBI National Academy, the International Coaching Federation. And we also have a small team of mental health professionals and a clinical psychologist. So we're really addressing the human performance, mental performance aspect from all angles, and creating our own training content that in a very short period of time can take a law enforcement professional and turn them into a very effective coach. One of the fundamental aspects of coaching is that we're not giving advice or we're not telling people what to do. We are really helping that client or that officer articulate and discover for themselves what they already know to be true or untrue. So, you know, this, I don't want to become too esoteric here, but our subconscious minds already know what we like and don't like. And a coach's job is really to help unlock and get clarity for an individual on where they're at in life and where they want to go. And then the client decides for themselves how they want to roadmap that journey out. So a coach is asking a lot of provocative questions, and, you know, helping a client settle, you know, kind of their own confusion in their head or in their life. The coaches are not saying, well, I did this, so you should too, or here's what our rule book says. It's not like that at all. So that's kind of how I would, in a nutshell, explain the training component of the coaches. The coaches we're also looking for, they have to have the right personality. They have to go through a series of interviews. They have to be comfortable to talk to. A lot of people look great on paper, but they're super awkward when you start speaking with them. And we are looking for individuals who are, you know, sociable, approachable, non-judgmental, and have a genuine desire to want to support someone else. Those are the primary things we're looking for. And then if you can pass all those things, then only then can you start training. The other question you asked, Chief, was how do we know that, you know, you as a leader, your agency's priorities are being in focus? And in short, what we would do is very much like when you go to a new doctor, you get an intake form and you talk about your medical history. We're going to do the same thing with you as an agency. So we want you and any of your other key stakeholders, whether that's your command staff or community leaders, to essentially fill out a brief form that gives us some context to what's your agency's mission, what are your values, what are your goals for the next 5 years, what do you want to see developed in all of your people, what type of habits or behaviors amongst your people are you not super keen on right now, what's going on in your community, what have been some, you know, controversies recently. So what we're doing is building essentially an agency profile, so that way, let's say an officer from your agency ends up booking a session. Well, that coach who got booked prior to going into session will be able to read the expose on what's going on at, you know, this police agency. Now I've got some context for where my client's coming from. And I also know what the goals and priorities of the leadership there are. So that's not to say that the coach is going to, you know, manipulate or push the client in any one particular direction, but they will be able to give some additional clarifying context if questions come up, or be able to perhaps explain a little bit more behind the scenes when a client presents, you know, some uncertainty or an unknown, or starts pointing the finger at somebody else rather than looking inward.
Yeah. Well, we're pushing right up on our hour where we talked that we hit that timeline, and I know I could talk for another 3 hours about this. And I know we're probably just scratching the surface for the people that are listening. So maybe I'll have a I'll give a little personal perspective on coaching myself. And, you know, for me, it's a little odd to say this, but, you know, I feel like I had a very successful career. I worked hard. I had a lot of great mentors. I mean, and that's, you know, starting with my own father, you know, I think that's, you know, something that was very beneficial to me early in life. Not everybody has, we don't all come from the same place. We have our own values. We have our own experiences, but, you know, when we work in public safety, you know, we do have a shared mission, and that is, it's universal, and it's really cool. And I think that we tend sometimes to backload knowledge in policing rather than front load it. And this is, again, this would might be something that I would ask those, especially, you know, those that might be in a position to think about, you know, bringing a coaching program to their agency. You can learn by doing, and we can do the typical things where we go to frontline supervisor schools, we go to the staff and command schools. All of those things are needed. They're necessary. They're amazing courses. But, you know, it was right towards the end of my career where, just through some different books and some different programming that I was reading, I branched out. I engaged in a coaching program, and it was very uncomfortable. And as part of this program, I worked with a PhD level coach. I had four sessions. I won't bring up names or anything like that, but that first session, man, I was very, very uncomfortable. I didn't know how it was going to go. I didn't know what it was going to say. You know, I'm a type A personality. I've done a lot of things in my life, and, you know, who's this guy going to come and tell me, you know, what I should be doing differently? But, you know, there was a part of me that always knew, hey, there are things that I need to improve on. And that's just, you know, it's been kind of one of my own individual mantras is, you know, never stop learning, never stop improving. So I told myself, I'm going to do this. And it was one of those things. Within the first 20 minutes, I felt great. The coach I worked with had some experience working with, you know, FBI HRT and some military special operations. So he was kind of familiar with the stressors and things that you would have in policing. And, you know, it was great because I wasn't laying on a couch. You know, it wasn't like, I didn't feel like I was going through psychotherapy, wasn't picking into the dark parts of my brain. It was really just a lot of questions and a lot of very pointed questions. And, you know, by the end of that first session, you know, that hour went very fast. I felt like I could have talked a lot longer, but he made me be very specific about a few things that we were going to work on between the first session and the second session. And for me personally, and I'll probably talk about this a lot on this podcast, but it was, what does my morning routine look like? And what's the first, and one of the questions he asked me, what's the first thing you do when you wake up? You know, and for most people, sometimes they say, well, I wake up and I go use the restroom and then blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, for me, the first thing that I do or did, I pick this thing up and look at it. And I start every day, you know, I end every day with things that I know I got to get done the next day. And, you know, my priority list, like I'm sure a lot of people do, but you pick up that phone, especially, you know, when you're responsible for other people. And then you start reading emails, you get text messages, and next thing you know, your day has been deprioritized. What was your priority is now changed. And you're just off track. And so it just really changes the way you approach your day. So he forced me to think about and he asked me, what are you willing to do? What are you willing to change? You know, because it obviously that's me. So my morning routine started from, you know, waking up, not looking at my phone, going immediately and doing 10 minutes of stretching and then 10 minutes of meditation. I use a Muse headset to do my meditations with, 5 minutes of gratitude journaling. And then I make my first cup of coffee and read a little bit of, you know, pick out something that I'm going to read. So 30 to 40 minutes. And I was just amazed by the impact that that little change had on me. And I'm thinking to myself, man, this is the back end of my career. I wish I would have had this opportunity at the beginning of my career, and what changes might it have had impacted, throughout my career, had I front loaded this opportunity to work with a coach in the beginning of my career. So, it's always great to get perspective from others. So I'm very grateful for that opportunity. I'm grateful for the opportunity to get the chance to work with folks at Axon Coaching and to get to talk to some of the leading experts in the area of peak performance and coaching and public safety. I'm really excited about what this podcast is going to bring to public safety and our community at large. So with that, I'm going to flip it over to you. You got any closing words for us here on our kickoff podcast?
Well, first of all, Chief, I got to say, I'm very impressed with your morning routine. I do not want to explain how I wake up every morning, but I'll tell you, it is not that proactive. it probably should be, but no, listen, hey, it's been a real pleasure having this conversation with you. And, I'm honored to be on the show with you. So it was a great conversation and thank you.
Awesome. So if you've got any questions and you want to learn more about Axon Coaching, go to the website, www.axon-coaching.com. You can reach out to us and we look forward to hearing from you. And we look forward to having all of you join us on some future episodes. And we've got some good ones coming. It's going to be really interesting. So stay tuned and have a great week. And that concludes another episode of the Coptimizer podcast. Thank you for listening. And again, thank you for spending some of your valuable time with us. Remember, listening to others and how they optimize their lives is one thing, but to transform yourself, you have to take action. There are different paths to excellence, but to accelerate your own personal growth, I urge you to consider getting a coach. And here's why. While your time is valuable, I also want you to consider something. Your time is fixed. We know how much of it we have. Energy, on the other hand, is not. The decisions we make about how to charge and refresh our body, mind, and spirit will ultimately determine how much energy we have to invest in our time. So, to make the most of each day, we need that energy. So, if you're in law enforcement, consider getting a coach and do so by going to axoncoaching.com and contact us today. Until our next episode, I'm 1042. And that concludes another episode of the Coptimizer podcast. Thank you for listening. And again, thank you for spending some of your valuable time with us. Remember, listening to others and how they optimize their lives is one thing, but to transform yourself, you have to take action. There are different paths to excellence, but to accelerate your own personal growth, I urge you to consider getting a coach. And here's why. While your time is valuable, I also want you to consider something. Your time is fixed. We know how much of it we have. Energy, on the other hand, is not. The decisions we make about how to charge and refresh our body, mind, and spirit will ultimately determine how much energy we have to invest in our time. So, to make the most of each day, we need that energy. So if you're in law enforcement, consider getting a coach and do so by going to axoncoaching.com. Check us out and contact us today. Until our next episode, I'm 1042.